Call this meeting to order. This is the January 28th, 2021 meeting of the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in. Witnesses will be sworn in prior to testimony. We'll do a mass swearing in just a moment. All proceedings of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. Decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are final. Challenges to the decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. Would ask at this time if anybody present has cell phones or devices to please silence them. We're going to stand in for the invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance. Y'all pray with me. Father, we just want to thank you for this day to come together to carry on the business of this city. Lord, I ask you to bless these proceedings. Lord, give us wisdom to hear everyone and to judge accordingly and righteously. Father, I pray that you bless every marriage and every family in the city of Savannah. And we thank you, Lord, for this in Jesus' name. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I guess most of the petitioners are online. If you will, at this time, wherever you are, if you'll raise your right hand and repeat after me, I solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth during these proceedings. So help me God. I'm believing, I guess, that all of y'all are doing that. So there are no items requested to be removed from the final agenda. Next, we have the approval of the minutes from the December 17th meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes? Michael Brown has moved to approve the minutes. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Condon. Remind me, how are we voting? Roll call vote. Okay. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yay. Yes.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the minutes from the December meeting are approved. Moving on to the regular agenda. We'll hear the petition of 142 Darling Street, variance 20-006066. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, excuse me. I totally skipped that. So do I hear a motion to approve the final agenda?
I make a motion.
Mr. Condon made a motion to approve the final agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Jarrett?
Yes.
All right, Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Brown? Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Okay, so the motion passes and the final agenda is approved. And now we're going to hear the 142 Darling Street.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. What I have on the screen here is an aerial view of the Woodville subdivision or the Woodville neighborhood. This is the area where the subject property is located. To be more exact, subject property is located on the north side of Darling Street in between Fair Street and the Dundee Canal within the RSF 6 residential family zoning district. The variance comes before the petitioner is currently seeking to subdivide the subject property, which is a 100-foot wide lot with 12,060 square feet, 2 foot wide lots. Just seeing here, I'm going to zoom in a bit more. Okay. Minimum lot width for property with the RS F6 zoning district is 60 feet. So essentially, the petitioner is requesting a variance for 10 feet of each of these 50-foot proposed lots. Historically, the Woodville neighborhood began as a rural farming community. For the most part, it still retains a consistent lot pattern of low to moderate residential density. Apart from these apartment complexes right here, which my cursor is hovering over. In the northeast corner of the neighborhood here near Bay Street, you see a cluster of more dense single-family residences. This particular area of the neighborhood is zoned RSF5. However, the less dense single-family homes are pretty much predominant throughout the neighborhood, as you can see right here where the actual subject property is. For all proposed, all proposed variances must meet specific criteria established within the ordinance. Just to note a few comments in response to the criteria. Regarding general consistency, staff notes that the ordinance establishes lot dimensions to give land use and development a consistent pattern. The proposed subdivision will result in lot widths of 50 feet, which is inconsistent with the overall lot pattern in the vicinity of the subject. In regards to special conditions, staff has not found any unique conditions or peculiar circumstances to this property for it to be identified as having a special condition. And as it pertains to the minimum variance necessary to make reasonable use of the land, staff finds this variance, if granted, is not the minimum variance necessary to make possible use of the land. The subject property's size as is suitable for the development of a single family residence. Also, to state on the record, staff received a phone call in opposition to the request from the president of the Woodville Community Action Organization, Mr. Tyrone Ware, on Wednesday, January 20th. So in closing, staff recommends denial for this request with an alternative suggestion. It's the staff's knowledge that the owner of the subject property is also the owner of the property, which is right here, lot 27. Staff recommends that the subdivision of both the subject property and this abutting lot into three separate lots, which would pretty much make these three lots conforming by being a bit over 60 feet. I think the precise number is like 66.7 feet in width. Any further questions?
Yeah, on the staff report, I believe it said that Habitat for Humanity of Savannah Chatham owns these. And I'm just curious, what is the land bank authority? What is that? I don't know that I've ever heard of that because it says that on the map.
Yeah, so previously, I'm not sure exactly when this subdivision plat was created, but the city did own these lands at one point in time. Okay. I think the transfer happened in April last year in 2020.
Okay. I mean, it's not really having much to do with this case, but I was curious about that. Yeah. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. Condon.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
You mentioned that the variance requested is not the minimum variance required. What would they need to do in addition if they wanted to meet the minimum variance required? It may be I misheard you. I might have misheard you.
They need 60 feet.
Right. No, what I meant was that it, in one of the statements, and I apologize because I'm looking at the map and I don't see the printout of the staff report. It mentions that. Thank you.
I think you're referring to the minimum variance comment.
Yeah, this one right here. Thank you so much. To make what is the minimum variance necessary for them to make proper use?
Use it now. Mr. Condon, I think the issue related to minimum variance is that the lots as they exist now meet the minimum standard, so they could be built upon. I think the alternative that staff was recommending would include bringing in the adjacent property, subdividing those two lots or recombining those two lots into three lots, and each of those three lots would also meet the minimum standards under the current zoning.
Thank you very much.
Meaning kind of right now he could build one house on there.
Yes.
Yeah, with no variance at all. Right. Are there any other questions for staff? Mr. Brown?
Yes, could you pull the plat back up again just for a second?
Sure.
Okay, the lot 27, what's the lineage across?
Like the lot frontage?
Yeah, I mean, not the footage, but the lineage. You've got 50, they're asking for 50, so apparently the lot he has is 100. But how much is the lot on lot 27? What's the length of that?
So the width of lot 27 is 100 feet wide.
I'm sorry?
100 feet wide.
So he's got two lots, 200 feet lots.
Correct.
Okay. So is there any, did he put any limitations on the side of the size of the building? I mean, it just, it shows a lot size, but it shows an outline for a building, but nobody knows what the building is. And would it, obviously, if it doesn't meet, if it's 20 feet, it's 20 feet out of zone, correct? I mean, he's asking for 120 feet and you've got 100 feet, correct?
I'm not sure if I...
Okay, well, he wants 260-foot lots.
260-foot lots. He has to have that, and he's asking a variance because he wants to put two houses on there.
No, I understand, but I'm saying the one lot he has now is 100 feet. In order to do two structures, he would have to have 120 feet, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so your recommendation, I think, is a sound recommendation.
Okay. Good morning. This is Karen Jarrett.
Morning.
Mrs. Jarrett?
I was wondering if the applicant has shown a willingness to follow the suggestion.
That would be you, Mr. Kiyokawa.
We haven't heard word from the applicant in regards to the suggestion.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions for staff? All right, hearing none. Would the petitioner like to speak? No. Is the petitioner there? Okay. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? You said that, please use the raise your hand feature on the computer. Okay, well, since the petitioner's not there and there's no public that would like to speak, is there any board discussion? Mr. Condon?
I wonder if, where this is a nonprofit, and from my own experience working with nonprofits occasionally, things can happen where people are supposed to be someplace and they're not there. I'm wondering if it would be best to make a motion to postpone this to the next meeting when they can represent themselves, meaning the Habitat for Humanity folks that are making this proposal.
You can certainly make a motion and we'll see what comes of that.
I'd like to make a motion that we postpone this to the next meeting to give the Habitat for Humanity folks an opportunity to review the really very sound suggestion by the MPC that they combine these two lots into three.
Okay. Mr. Condon has made a motion to continue this petition until the next meeting. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second the motion.
Seconded by Mrs. Jarrett. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Brown?
Does he combine the two lots? Does he have to combine the PIN numbers to make the one lot? He needs 180 feet, three buildings, and he has 200 feet. I'm sorry, excuse me. So it's, I think the suggestion is a sound suggestion, but I just wonder, would they have to combine the PIN numbers to make three separate lots?
I don't think there's anything in the ordinance says you can't exceed the frontage. It's just a minimum requirement.
That's correct, Mr. Merriman. Should the petitioner pursue staff's recommendation, when they go through the recombination process, they would be creating three new lots, so those lots would be granted new PIN numbers.
Great, thank you.
Okay, but is there any discussion on Mr. Condon's motion? If there's not, I'm going to ask for a vote. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Aye, yes.
Okay, Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the petition is continued until the next meeting. Next, we will hear the petition of 807 East 31st Street for a variance number 20-005829.
This subject property is in the Midtown neighborhood on the south side of East 31st Street, between Harmon Street and Paulson Street within the TR2 traditional residential zoning district. So this case is before us because the petitioner is seeking a variance for the required lot area to develop a two-family residence. The subject property is 4,144 square feet and is currently developed with a single-family home, which the petitioner has stated is going to be torn down soon. The lot area requirement for two-family dwellings in the TR2 district is 4,500 square feet, which the subject property is 356 square feet short of. Here is an aerial of the neighborhood, and I'm just going to zoom into street view. So across the street from the subject property, there are a number of existing two-family residences. This one here, and a few near the end of the street. All of these are in the same zoning district, and they all appear to be conforming lots containing these two-family residences. And I'll explain a bit more later on why these lots are conforming and the ones on the other side aren't for two-family dwellings. The proposed two-family dwelling is 2,818 square feet with the building footprint of 1,400 square feet. The footprint of this building or the proposed building is 278 square feet less than the actual existing structure that's there on site. Back to where it is. Okay. So in accordance with the criteria set in place for the approval of variances, staff finds that in general consistency, this portion of East 31st Street does not have a uniform pattern of lot area and has a variety of housing types. The requested variance is not likely to have the potential to adversely impact the public health, safety, or welfare of the neighborhood. Regarding special conditions, staff has found that the subject property and others on the southern portion of this block of East 31st are smaller in dimension than the properties across the street on the northern side of East 31st, which are all in the same zoning district, and several of which are developed with, you know, these two-family residences, which I've shown you on the screen. The lots on the northern side of the block have an approximate lot depth of 100 feet, while the lots on the southern side of the block, the same side as the subject property, has an average lot depth of 92 feet. So this is why the properties on the northern side of the street actually have these two-family residences without any issues of requesting a variance. That being said, in conclusion, staff recommends approval of this request with the condition that the dimensions of the proposed dwelling remain the same as they've been presented to staff in the application.
Okay.
Questions?
Thank you. Is there any questions for staff? Mrs. Jarrett or Mr. Hall, do you have any questions for staff?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir.
Is the petitioner available?
Yes.
Would you like to speak?
Based on the staff review, no. No comment.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? If you will, use the raise your hand feature on the computer. Okay. So, in that case, we will enter into board discussion. Any of y'all have anything you'd like to say before? Well, Mr. Condon?
I'm very familiar with this neighborhood. My daughter lives one street over, the staff is correct. It is an area of multifamilies and single family residences. This particular location, I think it's very practical to say that we're shrinking the actual footprint of the house, although going two stories as opposed to its current configuration. So I think it's an excellent use of the property.
Okay. Well, the chair would entertain a motion should someone like to make one.
I make a motion that we approve the recommendation of staff for the variance at 807 East 31st Street.
Okay. Mr. Condon has made a motion to approve the request for variance. Is there a second to the motion?
Karen Jarrett.
Seconded by Mr. Griffith. Is there any discussion on the motion before we vote? All right, hearing none. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the variance is granted according to staff recommendations. Next, we're going to hear the petition of 110 Ann Street. It's a variance to design standards 20-006246.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This petition before you is probably a little unusual for what you all normally look at. It's all about mezzanine, so let's get into it. The petitioner is requesting a variance from a requirement of the ordinance that requires mezzanines let me back up here. So this property is at 110 Ann Street, and the Historic District Board of Review approved a certificate of appropriateness for a proposed multifamily and mixed-use building at this location. As a part of that, the building design includes ground floor apartments with mezzanines. The ordinance requirement for mezzanines is that the aggregate floor area is not more than one-third of the area of the room or space in which it is located. So the petitioner is seeking relief from that requirement. And I'm going to show you just a couple of exhibits here to familiarize you with one, the location. This is a map of the subject property highlighted here between Zubly and Alton Streets. This is Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Over here is the Chatham County Courthouse for reference. So that is the site in which this this development has been approved by the Historic District Board of Review. The petitioner is requesting that the one-third requirement apply to the entire footprint and not to each residential room, because this would result in unusable mezzanine levels. The petitioner provided a package of information during the COA process, which I'm going to share here. And in terms of the variance request, the the review board did agree with, and staff recommended approval, I should say, preservation staff recommended approval of this request, and the Historic District Board of Review agreed with that. The primary findings included that the literal interpretation of the definition would result in unusable mezzanine levels and therefore was not consistent with the intent of that requirement, and that the percentage of the total footprint utilized as mezzanine would be 29.4%, which is still under the required one-third. Staff also found that the percentage of mezzanine on the interior does not affect the exterior appearance of the building and is therefore consistent with the intent of the ordinance. With those findings and others, the preservation staff recommended to the review board approval of this relief, and they agreed with that and forwarded a recommendation of approval to this body. I also asked the preservation officer, Ms. Mahalik, to be present here today, because this is a little bit more technical than we probably, you know, normally take a look at. So I'm going to ask her to come to the podium and fill in any gaps here, and I'll be prepared to answer any questions as well. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Leah Mahalik, Director of Historic Preservation. Good to see some of your faces. It's been a while. So, yeah, usually you don't see me much anymore since the new zoning ordinance was adopted, because typically these types of things are granted or not granted as special exceptions by the review board themselves now. But this original project was approved under the former zoning ordinance. Therefore, any variations to that would still come to you all. So I'll give you even a little bit more background information. This project was originally approved several years ago as a hotel. And when the pandemic started, the developer regrouped and changed it to an apartment building. So they actually haven't changed the height of their building. They haven't changed the number of stories. Anything like that. What they changed was the ground floor use from commercial, which they had things like a roller skating rink and an amphitheater and things like that on the ground floor. And now it's apartments. And because the ground floor was like a roller rink and that, the ceilings were like 18 feet tall. So you don't need an 18-foot tall ceiling in an apartment. So what they did was kept the ceiling height the same, but split it with a mezzanine in the middle. However, with the way that the old zoning ordinance was written, the standard for, or the definition for mezzanines, these mezzanines, I'm just looking for the correct picture of them. Let's see. Okay, so under the actual definition, this would be the size of these mezzanines in these apartments. You can see they're very tiny. I'll even zoom in. And virtually unusable when you don't exceed that one-third per unit requirement for a mezzanine. So, but they have that 18 feet of ceiling space to use. So what they came and asked the review board for was 30%, to not exceed 30% for the entire footprint of the ground floor instead, which results in this, which is more usable mezzanine space basically, but does not change the footprint of the building, does not change the height of the building, doesn't change the number of stories or anything like that. So the HCBR was in agreement that this, you know, was a proper application for a variance in this situation. And so they recommended approval to you all. And I hope that sort of helps explain it a little bit more.
Any questions for staff? Go ahead, Mr. Condon.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
First of all, I want to thank the MPC staff and the Historic Review Board. When I read this the other day, I have to say that at first I was slightly dizzy because there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yes.
thank you today for your very concise and appropriate answers to the obvious questions. You know, it seems to me that that this is a very practical matter, and I can understand why you all would have approved it. But I just really for today wanted to say thank you for all your hard work on this, because it does appear to be a wonderful project.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown.
I just have a quick question. I think it's a good solution too, but does that mean that each floor will be 9 feet or 8 feet? And are there any window openings?
I could have been. Well, you know, the mezzanine doesn't cover the whole level too. So I think underneath the ground, you know, underneath the mezzanine is like the bathroom and things like that. Right. So the living space, actually, yeah, I could probably show this better in floor plan. So for example, underneath, so the gray is the loft of each space. So open to below is the kitchen and the living room. So the kitchen and the living room, for all intents and purposes, have 18-foot ceilings, whereas this bedroom underneath and the bedroom above have 9-foot ceilings, and the bathroom have 9-foot ceilings. If that makes sense.
And the window openings stay the same? Is it an existing building?
No, it's not. It's new construction, but they didn't change the exterior to accommodate this different use inside. In fact, I can show you how the exterior did not change. Literally at all, because there was absolutely no reason for it to change just by increasing the footprint of the mezzanine on the exterior. So it literally, this variance literally does not change the exterior. It would go from this to this. So
the definition of the mezzanine on the staff report, but what's the difference in the mezzanine and a balcony?
Well, balconies on the exterior,
right?
And a mezzanine in this definition in the historic review board, in the historic district ordinance, I believe comes, and don't quote me because it's not my expertise, but I believe it's the same definition from the International Building Code, and it's a fire code thing, is my understanding, that once you cover more than 1/3 of a footprint, you need like 2 exits instead of 1, or you know, there's something like that. So a mezzanine can have 1 exit because it's a smaller in footprint, whereas a whole second floor would need 2 exits because you know, there's lots of technical. So basically, a mezzanine per code doesn't count as a floor. Therefore, in the historic review board ordinance, it doesn't count as a floor.
And since it's on the interior, the whole reason y'all are even hearing it is because it has to do with the floor to ceiling heights of the
rooms. It has to do with the number of floors that are permitted in the district, and a mezzanine is not floor. But if we give them a little bit more square footage, you know what I mean? If you give them a little bit bigger size, then
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, are there any other questions for staff?
No, this is Karen Jarrett. And thank you, Ms. Mihalik. I really like the solution as well, but I just wanted to verify that the fire code will allow the overall mezzanine calculation as opposed to apartment calculation.
I hate to speak on fire code, but my understanding is they just call it something else than what we call it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hall, do you have any questions for staff?
No, sir.
Okay, is the petitioner present online?
Yes.
Would you like to say anything?
I would just like to thank the MPC staff for that incredible presentation and explanation of the project, and for all their hard work. And I'd be happy to answer any additional questions that the board has.
Okay, are there any questions for the petitioner? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? If you'll just use the raise your hand app on the computer. Okay, nobody. All right, any board discussion on this petition? Mr. Brown.
Is there a requirement? Is there a requirement for a parking? Was that considered?
Usually on these large scale developments, yeah, they have a whole thing they go through. I don't think they're asking for anything with that.
They, I mean, that was part of the site plan process, which was a separate process, but that process has already occurred. I will mention that this property and of course many others around it are within the parking exempt part of downtown.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or board discussion? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion should someone like to make one.
Karen Jarrett here. I move to approve staff recommendation.
Okay, Mrs. Jarrett has made a motion to approve the petition according to staff recommendations. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Condon. Is there any discussion on the motion before we vote? All right, Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the variance is granted. Next, we're going to hear the petition of 220 East State Street for a variance number 20-006089.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, this one's a bit of an oddity as well, kind of a case that we don't see a lot here in the ZBA. The petitioner is requesting a variance for a 2-foot 10-inch reduction to the ordinance required 10-foot requirement for accessory structures to be separated from primary structures. A little bit of background, the property 220 East State Street is highlighted here. It's actually just down the street this way. It is located on the north side of the street between Abercorn and Lincoln Street within the downtown CBD zoning district. The historic main structure was constructed in 1893 and is a contributing structure within the Savannah National Historic Landmark District. The garage was constructed prior to 1954. I'm going to go to some street view images just so you can see the garage that we're talking about. Here's the garage here, whereas the townhomes are right here. So there are three or four townhomes that are linked together with the garage structure out back with access to the alleyway. The subject property is 0.04 acres in size and is developed with a two-story townhouse and garage. The garage was originally constructed onto one larger parcel, which included three townhomes. The lot was later subdivided and dividing the once six-car garage into three two-car garages. The garage in its existing location is less than 10 feet from the primary structure, which is important to note in this case. The petitioner plans to alter the garage by adding a second story proposed dwelling unit. So the residence that we're talking about is this one that's to the far right, and the garage that would they are requesting to have the second story put on is this one right here. It's important to note that the petitioner received a certificate of appropriateness from the Historic District Board of Review on January 13th of this year, and the HDBR also recommends approval to the Zoning Board of Appeals for the 2-foot 10-inch variance from the base zoning standard ordinance requirements. Just want to note a couple of things here in regards to ordinance consistency. While the variance request is not consistent with the intent of the ordinance, there are existing conditions that would make compliance with the ordinance difficult, if not impossible, from a construction perspective for this case. The variance request would not be injurious to the neighborhood or detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare. There are also several special conditions and circumstances that exist that are peculiar to the land, building, and structures involved in this variance request. As I noted previously, the garage is existing and its location is less than 10 feet from the primary structure. The garage was also one large structure before being split into a two-car garage. It's also important to note that the special conditions do not result from the actions of the applicant, as the garage structure was built prior to 1954 and quite a bit of time before the current zoning ordinance that we have in place today. The request for relief is not purely financial in nature. The intent of the proposed expansion is to provide an accessory dwelling unit above the garage, which they are able to do by ordinance standards. It's also important to note that the literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would unnecessarily limit the petitioner's ability to use the property for use permitted in the zoning districts. And the variance is the minimum variance necessary to accommodate the proposed addition to the garage structure. They're not asking for more than what they need. And the variance, if granted, would not confer on the applicant special privilege that's denied by this ordinance to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. For all those points mentioned above, staff is recommending approval for the 2-foot, 10-inch reduction to the ordinance required 10-foot requirement for accessory structures to be separated from their primary structures. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And actually, briefly, let me just show you the COA plans that they submitted to us as far as what it will actually look like. So here they're keeping one garage door. Here's the second story you can see above the structure. That's the proposed north elevation, and here's the proposed south elevation, bay window, as well as door. Now I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for staff? No, Mr. Griffin.
So they'll actually be raising the existing garage, not building on top of it?
No, they're actually building on top of it. So okay. They're going to change the outside veneer and everything like that. They're going to be switching out that garage door as well.
For a single one,
correct. So that's where they're keeping all this base, and that's why they can't comply with the zoning ordinance requirements, because they want to keep that existing structure and just build on top
of it. And the existing structure is outside or is too close to the main residence?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Any other questions for the for staff? Mr. Brown.
Quick question. Did the building that's the gray building on this photo, if you put a second story there, wouldn't it block the windows?
It's actually just a little bit shy here, that it actually ends up being close to a similar height here as well. But it's within the ordinance requirements or ordinance allowances that they can do that.
So the people in that building haven't made a complaint or
they're no, aware? We haven't received any complaints for or against this project.
Thanks.
Any other questions for staff? All right, is the petitioner available?
Yes, good morning. This is Shauna Casera.
Hello, Mrs. Casera. Would you like to say anything?
I don't have too much to say that hasn't already been covered. We do have a COA, so we have approval to build, and we are building on an existing structure that happens to be seven-ish feet away from the addition on the back of the house. So I guess one thing, if we could look at the plan, is just to note that 7 feet only occurs where you have an addition on the main house. Or we can look at the elevation.
Whoops, sorry, let me, do you know what page you wanna look at?
That one's good, right there. Excellent. So if you look at drawing number one or two, you'll see that existing condition and number one with the existing garage shown in green. So my point is that we're not going across the entire width of the lot with this request. It's just on the eastern half where we have that that 7-foot distance between the two structures.
Okay. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, I'm available for questions. I think it's pretty straightforward.
Any questions for the petitioner? All right. Well, thank you very much. This time, if there are any members of the public that would like to speak, if you could use the raise your hand selection on the computer. Okay, we have none. Well, in that case, we will enter into board discussion. Do any of y'all have anything you'd like to say or add? All right. Well, the chair will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve staff's decision.
Mr. Griffith has made a motion to approve the variance according to staff recommendations. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Condon. Is there any discussion on the motion? right, hearing none, then I will call for a vote. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Brown? Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
All right, then the motion passes and the variance is granted according to staff recommendations. And last item is 206 East 57th Street, the request for a variance 20-006350.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The petitioner is requesting a variance for a 5-foot reduction of the 20-foot front yard setback, which is required by ordinance for a new home addition. Just to give you some background here, the subject property is located on the north side of East 57th Street between Habersham Street and Batty Street and is zoned RSF6, which is single family residential. The subject property is 0.18 acres in size and is developed with a single story residence. It is a conforming size lot. And currently it's important to note that the residence has a porch with a roof that encroaches into the front yard setback. However, this is allowed by ordinance because it's not closed in. However, the petitioner proposes to replace the porch with a building addition that is larger than the existing porch. A closed structure such as an addition is not permitted to encroach into the front yard setback by ordinance requirements. Just want to show you a street view here. You can see this existing front porch is right here in this location. It's also important to note that five neighboring properties have voiced their support for the petitioner's request, so I wanted to put that on record and make that available before going through the ordinance requirements here. Staff has found that while the variance request is not consistent with the intent of the ordinance, the variance would not be detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare of the surrounding properties. However, encroaching the front yard setback is not in keeping with the rest of the block structure that's currently present on 57th Street, as all the homes are built to a uniform setback. Let me go here to their application and show what they're proposing, just so you can get a better picture. So this is the current existing structure. Where they want to do the addition is highlighted in the red dash marks. So you can see it envelops where the current porch is, extends a little bit further to the west, and goes back further as well. The orange line is the 20-foot front yard setback. There are no special conditions or circumstances that exist which are peculiar to the land, buildings, or structures involved, which are not applicable to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. Also want to note that the literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district or place undue hardship on the applicant. It's also important to note that the variance is not the minimum variance necessary, as this is strictly a condition imposed by the petitioner. The parcel has the size to accommodate an addition to the rear and side of the residence without needing a variance. However, the petitioner is not proposing such an addition at this time. The variance, if granted, would confer on the applicant special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. And for those points, staff has recommended denial of 5-foot reduction to the 20-foot front yard setback requirement by ordinance for this new home addition. Do you have any answer any questions?
I have a question. What is the intent of the ordinance, and how did you come to such knowledge of that intent?
So the intent of the ordinance is to have uniform front setbacks for all the structures. And like I said previously, the front porch, because it's not covered in, you're allowed by ordinance to encroach in that front yard setback a certain amount. By closing in, that becomes a closed structure. So the intent of the ordinance is to have a uniform street presence. Most homes, you know, meet that street presence. And if you have one that juts out more than the other, it kind of adds variety in which some cases on buildings that would be good. But in this case with front setbacks, the intent of the ordinance is for all of those to be uniform.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Mrs. Jarrett or Mr. Hall, do you have questions for staff?
No, thanks.
Okay. Is the petitioner present online?
I am.
Would you like to say anything?
I would. This is Eric Galbaugh. Thanks, members of the board, for your time this morning. So really, this variance request allows for us to create more livable space in the home, especially for the kitchen. We've used a really great architect to create something that would enhance the experience of the home for our family. And I do want to say that we've explored all options for adding on to the sides and the rear of the property. If we build out to the rear, it really would force us to revamp the kitchen that's brand new already. So because of the expense associated with that and the risk, given the four massive pines that we have along the rear of our property, we think we've landed on the best option, which you can see in the plans that we've put forth. Also note that we've spent thousands of dollars on architectural plans exploring those options. So we really haven't just been beholden to one idea. We understand that our plans are non-conforming, which is why we're seeking the variance. And while as Jordan mentioned, the existing covered porch crosses the setback and is allowed to cross that setback threshold, I do want to mention that our home addition would actually set back a bit further than the existing porch itself. So from a visual perspective, I think we believe that there would be no change in the appearance of encroachment, which would cause any second glances from the public. And as Jordan mentioned, as far as the public goes, I will say that we've shared our plans and have signatures from five of our neighbors. We knocked on nine doors. The other four, by the way, were renters or didn't want to get involved or thought we were Jehovah's Witnesses or something. So, but none of them refused to sign because of any issue with the variance itself. So I think ultimately the signatures represent at least our commitment to engage with those around us and welcome them into our home when things get back to normal. And that we take this variance seriously. So thanks again for your time.
Good. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Brown.
Yes, so I'm looking at the floor plan, and the addition is 19 feet across. That's more than the remaining section of the house. So it's really larger than the house itself. And the if you were I'm looking at it, and it appears as though you could have the same results by moving it to the towards the lane by 5 feet. Which would give you exactly. So really the only reason for doing it in the front versus in the rear is financial, correct?
Well, in the rear, we also have some like landscaping that's been done that we don't want to really encroach upon. And I think in terms of the extension out to the right, yeah, really we're needing a little bit of extra space in the front to create more enhanced livability and area for, yeah, I guess the living space.
But if you had the same square footage and you moved it to the rear, it would be the same square footage, correct?
I believe it would, yes.
Okay, so really it's just a financial decision other than having to move some landscaping.
Yeah. It is, yeah, it's a financial decision and also a decision, you know, from our perspective of, you know, loving our landscape and the livability of our backyard.
Are there any other questions for the petitioner? Okay. It is time, if there are any members of the public that would like to speak, if you will indicate by clicking on the raise your hand section on the computer there. Do y'all see anybody? Mrs. Barber, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, I just had a question about the ordinance. So if the porch is not, would they ever be able to add on to the porch and then further bring the property line closer to the street?
Steph, would you like to address that?
Yeah, so they could add on to the porch horizontally. So let's say just running east-west. I'd have to check on the ordinance as far as how many feet they can encroach into that setback. But that, you know, for example, they wouldn't be able to extend their porch all the way to the front, you know, street line. That's not permitted by the ordinance. Usually it's about a 3 to 5 foot or 3 to 6 foot encroachment that is permitted for a covered porch, which they fall within at this point in time.
Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Yeah, I just didn't know if, because you said that the porch, the unenclosed porch later on, I didn't know if it could be added on later and further set the house north, south.
They could, as long as it was still in keeping with the ordinance requirements.
Okay.
All right. Are there any other members of the public that would like to say anything? We have another one.
Hi, my name is Todd Rodenberg. I am the general contractor for this job. And I would like to revisit the comments about shifting the proposed addition to the rear of the house to the north. And that the reason that that was not originally done was just for architectural and the interior use of the proposed addition, that if it was shifted back, they lose the space on the inside the front door to the right that has a specific use as a mudroom / keeping room. And without that space, the proposed plans do not achieve the intended goal and use of the property.
Okay. Any other members of the public want to say anything?
Question.
Oh, Gil, go ahead, Mr. Condon.
Good morning, sir. I just have a question for you as the contractor. The do you know offhand what the square footage of the addition is?
It is.
Well, it doesn't have to be exact, just a ballpark.
It's it'll be adding 325 square feet.
If we cut off the front piece of it to keep us within the setback, how much space do we lose? Was it about 3 or 4 feet you'd have to roll it back?
Yes, that would take off about 75 square feet of the addition.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure I understand that your first statement. So if you did what Mr. Brown recommended, which is to take the whole addition and slide it back that, let's say, 3 feet or 3.5 feet to make it within the setback, you would then lose that. If you wanted to continue with the same size, you would then lose that square footage on the back. What's directly behind this addition?
There is a covered porch area in that corner of the space. As you can see in that overhead view, that the roof covers it. And then, so if we were to shift the whole thing back, it would incur significant changes to the roof lines, which in turn incurs significant cost to the project.
I'm not sure how I see that. What I'm suggesting is, if you take the whole thing, as Mr. Brown recommended, if you take the whole addition, I know we're sharing screens,
yes,
so you can see. So if you take that whole addition and you slide it back to the setback, according to this, there's something behind that has a path leading to it. If you see what I'm looking at here, what is that?
Yes. It's a covered patio.
If you can see it in the overhead, it's all covered by trees.
It is a covered patio. It has if you go back to the overhead view, I believe you could see it. It's under the roof.
You have younger eyes than me. I can't see it.
So, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, there is a tree over that section, but it is covered by the roof.
All right. So there's a as Mr. Brown recommended or suggested, it would be possible. I don't necessarily buy your argument about the roof line. If we slide this thing back. Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Are there any other members of the public that wish to speak? Okay. Would the petitioner like to comment on anything that's been said by the public?
No more comments at this time.
All right, in that case, we're going to enter into board discussion. Do any of you have anything you'd like to add? To sway your board members one way or the other?
I'm kind of on the same page here as Mr. Brown. It seems to me that the goal of achieving additional square footage, opening up the kitchen to make it more usable, and so on, can be achieved within the front yard setback allowance. The addition may not be quite as large if they don't want to slide back into the patio area, and I can understand that. But certainly, I don't see a reason to go beyond the current 20-foot setback in this instance, given that there is another viable option. It may not be as attractive, but to the homeowner, but it certainly is equally practical.
Okay. Mr. Brown, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think the addition being 19 feet and the balance of the building is 20 feet. So it's almost 50-50 for the frontage of the building, 50% larger and 50% to the rear. And it appears to be somewhat of a financial issue because of some landscaping. I think you could obtain the same amount of square footage and still accomplish your goal and be within the zoning.
Thank you. Any other board discussion? Well, I just want to add one, that if the intent of the ordinance is, like staff said, to have a uniform look there, asking to encroach 5 feet is not that, it's not going to change the look of that block that much. And that's just my opinion. And that, if we're going to take into account the intent of the ordinance, we got to take that into account. The other thing is that before I call for a motion, if whoever makes the motion wants to make a motion to deny it, then you can make that along with staff recommendations. If you want to make a motion to approve the variance, you need to kind of tie that to something within the ordinance to make it a defendable motion, because that's what we're here to do. So that being said, at this time, the chair will entertain a motion. Should someone like to make it?
Karen Jarrett here. Move to approve staff recommendation.
Okay, Mrs. Jarrett has made a motion to approve staff recommendations, which would be to deny the variance. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Brown. Is there any discussion on the motion before we vote? All right, hearing none, Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the variance is denied. There's no other business on the agenda. And in that case, I'd like to declare this meeting adjourned.